Accession number 30271, reel 15.
Leading aircraftsman Walker, reel 15. You were saying that you think it was heavy equipment that was moved down to the docks to follow on.
And, well, it took us the 2 days. Oh. And this was obviously that the ground crew had gone off and the aircraft had left as well. Mm. And this is where the space was used for General Sikorsky's Liberator to be parked up.
You also mentioned in early 1944 that you had news about a battle in which 11 submarines had been spotted and 9 had been attacked, and that you got this news from Squadron Leader Weeks. Do you remember about that?
Yes, I do. Because of the intensity of the attack now, which was we were covering the approaches of the North Atlantic to the pens for the submarines, we're covering this now 24 hours a day, and therefore the result was that the submarines were then becoming collectively grouped outside of the range of the aircraft in the North Atlantic, and probably 5 would come in and be on the surface at the same time. Now, the battle would be is that when one of our aircraft found one of these groups, they would be all in prepared state, armed. That means that they'd have the sleeves off the guns and things like that, ready for instant action. And the whole aim was that a concerted anti-aircraft fire would deter our aircraft. And so the...
So they're concentrating for mutual support.
Yes. Mutual support. Mm. And would probably be all, I'm surmising now, they'd probably be all facing towards the guns, facing outwardly so as to cover all areas. But then our reaction was that when one aircraft would find them, they would do a circuit round continuously and would call up. Now, this is when radio was being a little bit more used. They'd call up neighbouring aircraft, and the result was that they'd probably finish up with 4 or 5 aircraft, and one of them would decide to go in and do a bombing raid, dropping depth charges. And, of course, while they were being detracted, it could be, I don't know, with the actual tactics, but the whole idea was to try and disconcert them so that there could be an attack from a good angle. Mm-hmm. Now, the whole aim to attack a submarine is to come in at about 30 degrees angle to its hull, so that you could straddle it, and even nearby depth charges could cause damage on either side as well, hopefully. That was the scheme, as far as I can make out.
So you'd be trying to go for a sort of diagonal straddle across the body of the submarine?
One of them, there'd be an interaction. It was a battle. Mm. And this was lasting quite a while. I think it was about 6 months. No, not quite as long as that. It was towards the end of the 6 months. And I know in one particular case that there was 5 grouped, and Sunderland was involved, and our aircraft were involved, and the net result was that they gradually got all 4 of the submarines. And but it was a hard job. We lost aircraft as well. Mm. But fortunately, the Navy was in greater numbers. They'd stationed it in the bay, ready for this sort of action taking place. And so there was literally a battle.
So the concentration of forces.
It was the Coastal Command, the Navy, the German submarines, and they were sending out aircraft to try and get our flying aircraft as well. So it was an air battle as well as a marine battle.
What sort of aircraft were they sending out to contest the airspace, do you know?
I don't know. I believe there were, I've read since, I think that there were Heinkels with extra fuel tanks attached. And that, but I mean, we would be more in range of the German aircraft than we would be to our own landing points, because they're coming from the peninsula, Cornish Peninsula, or they'll be going from Gibraltar. Sure. And either way, we had a longer route to take. So, I mean, they could follow our aircraft and still get, when they had to turn away for want of fuel, then they could be followed and still be in trouble.
Yeah.
So the losses were quite high.
Now, you mentioned this officer, squadron leader Weeks.
Yes.
Who was he and what was his post? Was he commanding the squadron or was he...
No. Our commander was Cresswell for 172 Squadron. And he took 172 Squadron, half of the... Gibraltar Squadron as a whole was split in two, Ground Staff and an air crew. And Cresswell went back to, I think it was Chimna, and started to operate from there. And the remainder could well have been his squadron leader Weeks. But I can't tell you that for certain that that was his post, but it sounds like it.
Do you remember how he gave you the news? Did he have a formal briefing or did he just mention it casually? Do you remember what?
Well, do you know, I don't think he ever called a church parade or a parade of any sort, so I never really got to know him, with the exception that when I was on duty crew, which I got not very often, but if I was on duty crew, then you invariably knew what the leader was, the captain. No, not much more than that.
Another thing you mentioned is that the Royal Navy brought in a submarine that had been forced to the surface by one of your aircraft.
It was yes. This, of course, had to finish up with being in the bay, but I believe it was taken into the marine docks there. And I don't know what happened beyond that.
Do you remember? Did you see it?
No. No. You can't see the docks from the north front. I should have had to have gone out on the yacht
to have a look. And again, coming back to the Americans, you mentioned that the American Super Fortress had two J-type dinghies in it and that you did an inspection of the dinghies and that the American aircrew wanted to...
No, I don't remember a Fortress
coming. You don't remember that. They wanted you to demonstrate the way the dinghy worked actually in the sea. You couldn't really oblige them because you didn't have a spare one.
I remember going with some aircrew and. They wanted to demonstrate how to tip the dinghy back when it was wrong way up, if it had been inflated and it was upside down.
So it was capsized.
Capsized, in a sense. And this meant that you still retained everything because the food pack was still there. Mm. But it was a very awkward thing. Mm. Now...
Was there a drill for doing that, a specific...
No, it wasn't a drill. It was a question. I'd done it myself to find out how you would do it. I took a dinghy down there one time to the med and when it wasn't too rough and tried it out. And what I did, I finished up that I'd swim the weight of the bottle. So you had a cylinder with a gas bottle on that. I swim that so it was more or less under me belly, and then try and lean in as front hard as you could into it and fan round and get the rope. There's a pickup rope round the edge of it, and you get hold of the rope and move the whole thing round so as you've got the wind to catch the dinghy. Now then, if there was any wind at all, or if there was any waves, get it into the waves, then you literally lean back, and it was light enough that you could topple it over, but you finished underneath. And so you were submerged. So before you did that, you had to take a deep breath. So there was a plan, and it's probably this that I went through with them.
It sounds as though you had to really be very confident of yourself
in
the
water.
Well,
you had to know what you were doing.
Yes.
Because, you see, if you get on to trying to get on to the dinghy, it's upside down, they want to get on the top, and your weight's in the wrong place. And so it was a question, you know, if you thought about it, you could do it. And one man could do it. I've done it. But only with the aid of wind and
waves.
Yeah.
Do you remember if this air crew that you trained did actually do it themselves? Did they follow your example?
Yes. Yeah. Mm. Well, I think they were quite happy to let me demonstrate. Really, there was only one chap who had to go at it, and he didn't do very well, but nevertheless, he had a go at it, and I think that it would have been all right. Maybe they didn't want to get the faces wet, I don't know. But you did feel it. You had to take a deep breath before, and because you then had to get yourself out, round, and onto the top.
And then you'd have to get yourself out of the water and into the dinghy,
right,
wouldn't you?
Yes, yes. And that's not easy. Because you literally have to sort of draw yourself, keep yourself down as low as you can on it, and if you're not careful and you come in from the leeward side, it can fall back over,
yes,
over again, particularly if it's not fully inflated. And so the best chances are is to go swim round or pull round until you got to the windward side and get in with the wind. There was an art to it, and for anybody that's not experienced it, and to try and do it in the dark would be, and of course most of our aircraft were flying during night. I'm surprised more air crew didn't experiment that way, but they'd rather not know, I think, and they weren't going to go in.
Perhaps they were just counting on not having to do it. Perhaps they were optimists.
Well, I was doing it in a pair of trunks, and I wouldn't like to think that you had a uniform as well. And
a flying suit might be rather cumbersome if you're in the water.
Yes, I should think so, yes. That wasn't tried.
Something you mention again is the arrival of Winston Churchill and his wife and his daughter in Gibraltar.
Not seen, hearsay.
Ah. I think they arrived in an Avro York.
That was, again, another aircraft I went to have a look at. Mm. And it was only because I went to have a look at it that I spoke to somebody who was there and asked, you know, something about it. And he did mention that who it was. But I never saw them come, never saw them go.
Earlier on, you were mentioning that you had pen friends, and you had one in particular who wanted you to court her, Winifred Coe, I think her name
that's
was.
That's right. That was at Tipton.
Yes, and that you wrote her a letter explaining that you didn't think it was a good idea
to marry in
wartime.
Yes. Well, I'd had one or two shakes that pointed out quite clearly that you're not immune from severe accidents. And so I just decided that I wouldn't marry until I left the services. And I know it was upsetting for her, I've no doubt, but I don't know why she thought I would marry her, because we never really met. It was a pen friend.
Well, many a wife has been courted by correspondence.
Maybe so, but not me.